Ruchama Bayim to the 20th and final series of Shi'urim, of lectures on the redaction of the Babylonian Talmud. With this lecture, we will conclude the series of Shi'urim on the redaction of the Babylonian Talmud. I would like to, before we, I mean, it's apropos that we give a little of a summary of what we've done, if we've done anything, but in any case, I want to go back to a point that was raised last time. Last time I mentioned that during the time of the Gaonim, there were certain sections of the Shast, like the Lashon of the Rambam, Mitzas. But that's clear, whoever is familiar with the Gaonic literature. And I don't include Rav Hai Goyin or Rav Nisim Goyin. Speaking about the early Goyinim, that certainly whoever is familiar with the Goyinic literature will see that when they do quote, they quote parts of the Shas. In other words, we don't have from before the 10th century, before the 11th century, an entire Shas with the Perush on Shas, which seems to indicate that, which is a proof of what I was speaking about the last two shiurim, that in fact actually the Shas as in its entirety has become the standard text of Limud only really begins at most the end of the 10th century, beginning of the 11th century, despite the fact that Rav Hai Goyin and Nisim Goyin are in the 11th century. Nonetheless, the change in paradigm began before that. In any case,
according to this, the Arishvoyim happened in the beginning of middle of the 10th century.
The middle of the 10th century? Okay, fine.
If the king of Spain, Abdach, Rahman, and Nazir.
Okay, so but it's the next generation.
So he proclaimed himself caliph in 929.
Right, but the next generation, so their children.
So it's the middle of the 10th century.
Middle century, very, very good. Okay, so their next. Okay, right, was Rabbeinu Hanan was the next generation. That's towards the end of the 10th century.
Same.
Okay, fine. In other words, we're in a. In other words, if that happened, then after. In other words, Rabbeinu Chushiel, whatever it is, the Rishonim is speaking. Chushiel is his son.
Right.
So we have to add another. In other words, we have to add a little bit of time. So it's towards the end of the 10th century. Right. Whatever it is, the end of the 10th century is still a 200-300 year difference between that and the 8th century, as previously postulated. Okay, fine. But what I wanted to say, I wanted to bring a little bit of a proof of Haraya, that in fact, actually. That the time of the Gaonim, right? But the time of the Gaonim, we're speaking about even the latest Gaonim, right? I mean, there was a time of the Gaonim for a long period of time. There was only small sections of the Shas that were connected with what's called halachas. That the, for example, of Yudai Gaon writes the halachas psukais. So he quotes bits of the Shas. Or for example, the Shi'iltis quotes bits of the Shas in each halacha. In other words, the Shas was written, and the Shas and Lachas were taught with the Shas from bits and pieces of the Shas that would negate it to a specific halacha. So one of the rayas, I thought of a raya to bring this from the Gemara itself, is because in his Hakdama, in Rav Isaac Stein's Hakdama to the Smag, we've spoken about it. Rav Isaac Stein wrote Hakdama to the Smag, in which he claims that for sure the Shas was written down during the time of the Gaonim. That he says clearly, so we're going, and he brings proof from the sugyas themselves, and he mentions the fact that in Gittin of Samach and Aleph, that it was Rabbi Barav Yosef Damataveyu High Sefer after also Asulam Mikrebei, and Ma Barav Ashi says it's evil also to betaltel it, and then the Gemara says Isus was some affair of Sech, which means that for sure the writing of the Shas took place after the time of Ma Barav Ashi. Which is later, I mean, beginning of the Kufr that took place after the Shas. We would call it the Sabarayim, but whatever it is, it's certainly not the Rav Ashi or the son of Rav Ashi. Now, what's interesting is that the Gemara, the same statement, Eisla Seisla Shem Afer Sera Secha, would probably be the same Makor. It appears in the Gemara in Tamud of Yudal and Beis. And what's the question of the Gemara? The question of the Gemara is it Mutter permitted to write halachas? The Lashon of the Gemara is it permitted to write halachas? And the Gemara goes back and forth in Tabora, and then the Gemara says, Eis l'sois l'ashem efer asor asecha. Which means, is that when the Gemara raised the question and gives the answer, was speaking about a tekufa that that's after the time of Abba Rav Ashi. It could have been considerably after that time. So in other words, at the time of the Ga'inim, when Rav Isaac Stein claims that Shas is first written, Ezra of Hesar Secha, was speaking about the writing of halachas. That's speaking about the writing of the entire Shas. It's the writing of halachas. That was a big shalak. Can you write down halachas? So in other words, it seems to be clear from this understanding of the Gemara of Tamura, based upon the Gemara of Isaac Stein, that in fact, in other words, the Gemara, even during the Tekuf of the Goyim, certainly the beginning of the Goyim, is basically trying to decide, the Gemara is being done, the Gemara is examining, is it permitted to write down halachas? So we're not speaking about writing down the entire Shas. What's halachas? So halachas like a Yudai Goyim, halachas Pesukais, or like the She'iltas, or even maybe even the Rif. What is the Rif again? The Rif is...
10th century. But he must have had a written text.
Who says he had a written text?
He's a Talmud of the Arba Shvuyim.
Okay, so a Talmud. So in other words, okay, fine. So that's the beginning, but that's the end of the 10th. The Rif must be the end of the 10th century.
Yeah.
Rabbeinu Chananel is the end of the 10th century. Rabbeinu Chananel is the son of the Arba Shvuyim. The Rif is after that.
Right.
So in other words, the Rif is the end of the 10th century, beginning of the 11th century. I want to claim, though, it must be because Rav Shira Goy, when he writes his letter, says clearly the Shas was not written down. Rav Shira Goy is nifter at the very beginning of the 11th century. So maybe he wrote his letter 20, he lived until he was 100 years old. So maybe he wrote that letter at the end of the 10th century. In other words, we can locate the writing of the Shas at the end of the 10th century.
And the Rif wasn't the first one to write it down.
Okay, fine. Let's do what Ben Chananel was, okay? What is Ben Chananel? The end of the 10th century? Has to be. The Abba Shvuyim is the middle of the 10th century. What date did give the Abba Shvuyim?
I mean, it was in the reign of the king who lived from 929, who became king, caliph in 929, and he died in 961.
1013 to 1103, sorry.
Is
Drift.
What?
Drift.
Is what?
The Rif.
Is when?
1013
to 1103. Okay, right. At the end of the 10th century. Okay. Okay, very good. The end of the 10th century is the Abba Shvuyim, right? Or by the way, the Abba Shvuyim.
Before 960.
The Abba Shvuyim is 960.
Right.
And then the sons of the Abba Shvuyim wrote down the Shas. That's what I'm claiming. They wrote down the Shas. That's clear. Right? And that's the end of the 10th century. And then comes the Rif. I think it comes out perfectly. Not to mention, that comes out perfectly. So the Shas written down the end of the 10th century. That's our conclusion, our halachic conclusion. Okay? The Gemara that we have, right, which was redacted by the Sobarayim, was speaking about the, maybe at most, the end of the 5th century, 6th century. So then there's halachas. That's clear. The shiltas is the 8th century. The shiltas is the halachas psukas is the 8th century, 7th century. In other words, it works out. In other words, that by the time it was the Gemara, can you write down halachas? So after that, 100 years after that, you have the halachas psukas of Yudagoyim, of Doigoyim, or the shiltas. Okay? I think it works out more or less. But anyways, that's the conclusion is that for many years, it was permitted to write down what's called halachas. Halachas means is that they would write down sections of the Shas, a little bit like the Rif, but less than the Rif, like halachas pesukais, and that was until that was basically from the time of the, let's say, the 6th century, or maybe the 6th or 7th century, till about the 10th century. And then in the 10th century, towards the end of the 10th century, you have to write down the entire Shas. That's what we have to. That's my estimate, my humble estimate. Okay. Okay. Fine. Now, what I wanted to perhaps summarize a little bit what we've said because this is the final of 20 shiurim, and actually we've gone through many, many tekufas. Tekufas historically and tekufas within the shiurim. And I thought that maybe it's very, very important. If I divide these 20 shiurim into several tekufas, so the first tekufa was basically an attempt to understand from what time can we locate the give and take, the shakla batalya, the dialectical give and take of the Shas. Where does it come from? So we mentioned the shita of the Deiras HaShainim, Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Halevi, who claimed that most of the shakla batalya of the Gemara really is from the time of Abaye Verova. And then Rav Ashi added on a little bit. That's his lashon. Now, I think I show that this is not only is this not the sheet of any Rishon. It's not the sheet of any Rishon. It's Yitzchak Isaac Halevi against the Rishonim. Now, Yitzchak Isaac Halevi didn't really care much for the Rishonim. He says here, I'm quoting from I'm actually not confident of himself. I'm quoting from Shlina Zalman Havlin has an article in the, I think, the Sefer HaYevil for Shaul Lieberman. And there he has an interesting article. He's a fun guy. He edited the Tshuvas HaGoyinim. And it's called Al Hasima Sifutit, Ki Yisoyed HaChaluk L'Kufat Ma'alach. It speaks about different eras and how the literature, the redaction of the literary redaction is a basis of the different, of the which distinguishes one ear from another. So, basically he says, he quotes the Deiras HaRishonim, who says, about the Rishonim, he says, Shalai ditiku b'dvorim ke'elo, v'dibru ke'shiluach b'pnei shiyu trudim b'ika inyona ba'alocha v'dvorim ke'elo. Basically, Deiras HaRishonim wants to claim, and this is in Amud, page 682, he says that the Rishonim like were medatek in things. They were medatek in things. I'm sure Goy was medatek in things. They were basically, they were busy with halacha. So when they wrote these things, they were medatek in these things. And then he speaks about Rav Shua Goyin, Charitzas Mishpato, right? Basically, he speaks out against the Rishonim. He should, because he's chaylik on them and everything. But in my opinion, when I say this with great humility, you can't speak like this on the Rishonim. And the fact is that the Deiras HaShainim Shita, in my opinion, is Keneged HaRishonim, which means Keneged Avraham Masayra. It's a very little bit of a paradox that Deiras HaShainim was trying to strengthen the Masayra, and you can't strengthen the Masayra by trashing the Masayra. It doesn't. It's a tata de satsa. It doesn't work. The Shita of all the HaShainim, as we've seen, is Sakva time began at least from Rav Ashi. And according to most Rishonim, continued even after Rav Ashi. There is no sheet in any Rishon that the Shakla Batalya and the Gemara began before Rav Ashi. There's no sheet like that. So the Deiras HaRishonim, in my opinion, is basically, I want to quote the Gedaya Nadal in the Sefer Daf Lamed Gimel, brings from Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Halevi and said that he was a tremendous Goyin, but he had an agenda could certainly blind a person. I'm saying this with great humility, but you know, I guess it applies to everybody. But I'm saying this is that, the fact is that the Deiras HaRishonim is connected to Rishonim, So in other words, the first part of the series of lectures was coming just to show that the Shita of the Rishonim. We brought the Tosfos, we brought the Rashbam, we brought the Ramban, we brought many Rishonim over and over. That the Shakla Batalya of the Gemara first, we brought Rashi, the Shakla Batalya of the Gemara clearly begins with Rav Ashi. This doesn't mean there was Shakla Batalya before that, Chas V'Shalom, there was. We brought a Gemara in Krisis that there's something called Gemara that you can be that's called Hayra. There was an oral Shakla Batalya, but the Shakla Batalya as we know, in the form in which it appears in the text of the Shas, begins with Rav Ashi. There's no question about that. Now, that was the first important point that we made. Whoever learns Gemara Rishonim understands that, but if you learn the Deiras HaRishonim, you might forget it. Now, however, we explained that the Shakla Batalya of the Torah is what's called a directed Shakla Batalya, which means is that, first of all, we understood is that it was clear from many Rishonim, I mentioned here Rabbi Isaac Stein, but this was clear from Rishonim, that in fact, not only was the Mishnah transmitted orally, that in fact, till even certainly until up certainly up to the point of Rav Ashi, what we're dealing with here is a Shekhar V'Tayin that was oral. In other words, the Gemara is presenting us with an oral tradition. And part and parcel of an oral tradition, we explained the Shekhar V'Tayin, the Gemara, is directed. It's a directed Shekhar V'Tayin. Sometimes the Gemara will, in fact, put things together. We saw Ramban in Daf Ayin Dalet in Shabbos. Many the Rishayim will say the Kash of the Gemara is Lav Dafka. What does this mean? This means that in an oral transmission where halachic concepts and halakhic statements are being transmitted orally. So is that we're not necessarily interested in what's called an objective understanding of the text, but rather the understanding of the text from the viewpoint of the Sanhedrin or the Amora at that time, who's using the text as a proof of what he's saying. In other words, what distinguishes an oral culture from a written culture, in a written culture I have to prove the texts are objective, I have to prove my statement is in fact the proper objective reading of the text. In an oral culture, I don't have to necessarily prove that my reading of the text represents the objective reading of that text, but rather I have to show the logic of my reasoning, and I might use texts as part and parcel of the logic of my reasoning, but that the use of text as part of that oral culture does not necessarily mean that that's the understanding the text you will have if you have the text in front of you as part of written culture trying to understand objectively what that text means. In other words, the Shekhar V'Tayin of the Gemara is a directed Shekhar V'Tayin that's meant to get at a certain halachic conclusion, right, of those of Amoraim who are engaged, or put it this way, of those from Rav Ashi onwards, who are engaging those of Amoraim in arriving at what they feel to be the proper halacha. So in other words, this is a very, very much of a feature of what I claim to be an oral culture. When I speak to you, you don't see text in front of you. What you do is I'm trying to explain you the logic of what I'm doing, how something comes from a Mishnah. When I explain it orally to you, the important thing is the Das Torah, the idea that I'm trying to arrive at, and I'm using my understanding of this text as they relate to my Das Torah. So this is a very, very important thing. I think this is a thing that, I mean, when you speak to a person orally, right? It comes up like this. Now, what's interesting is that based upon the fact is that even though the Gemara, and this is very important, the Gemara was transmitted orally. When the Gemara is written down, it's not a written text. We understand a written text, I know, Shakespeare, whoever Shakespeare was, that he thought of something, he wrote it down. The Gemara is a written transcript of something oral, which means it's what's called, I introduce this concept, maybe I use this just a lashon to make believe that I'm an intellectual, the hermeneutical space between the actual text and between the people who are talking in the text. Which means that even though I have a text of the Gemara, the Shekhar V'Tayin is basically part of an oral tradition, which is really not part of that text. If I have a text, I can assume, and I know the author, and the author wrote down the text, when I told the idea, he wrote down the text, so I could try to analyze what does he mean. And therefore I could take that text and understand it objectively. In a text which is transmitting an oral discussion that took place 300-400 years beforehand, right? Things are more opaque, they're sasum. Like the Netziv says, it's like Dhamma, to Emek She'ela, the Dalchei Hayra, the Gemara, are sasum, they're hidden from us. Meaning is that there's a specific Das Torah, a Weltanschauung, a conception of the halachic issue, which either Rav Ashi or those who came after Rav Ashi had. They're using sources in order to structure their understanding of the halacha, but they're not trying to objectify text which I can be privy to. So therefore, because of this, the analysis of scholars like Professor Livni is totally irrelevant. It's beyond the point. Who cares? Professor Livni looks at the original Tosefta, looks at the original Maimer and says, you got it wrong, therefore you didn't understand it, therefore it was lost, therefore the whole thing is a chaos and a balagan. Halivdi doesn't understand the concept of an oral culture. Therefore, his method is flawed meikara. It's basically trying to use biology, is trying to understand a question in physics, or is trying to use an eye doctor to understand a problem of having an ulcer. It's basically totally irrelevant. I mean, not the fact that it totally dismantles the entire oral tradition. I don't want to speak about that because I'm not, this is not a blog. But in any case, to understand what is the Gemara doing, the Gemara is not coming to take statements of Braises and Tosefta's and Amorayim and objectively understand Pshat, so therefore there's an objective textual analysis which is revealed to anyone who opens up the text. But rather, there was an oral psak issued by a person 300-400 years ago before the text was written, who basically invoked these braises as part of the way in which he expressed this psak. The expression of the psak involved the shakal v'tayim, then the ideas by which he built up his own psak. But it wasn't to objectify these sources. So the entire analysis of Professor Lipnig, in my opinion, is totally irrelevant. It's very nice, but it applies the wrong tools for us. It basically, in my opinion, expresses a misunderstanding of what the text of the Gemara is, which is just a recording of an oral tradition. You had a question?
Doesn't this, along with the living, doesn't this doom us in trying to learn Gemara? I'm saying because when you're coming at it, we're looking at an oral argument as a text. Isn't that...
What are you talking about?
When we try to learn the Gemara, we're looking at it as a text.
No, I understand that, but I understand that. Well, we'll get to that in 1 second. But like this, what I'm saying is that the fact is, but this has an important consequence, which I think I mentioned. The consequence is that, you see, if I'm treating it as an objective text, so therefore there's no room for creativity. There's only one pshat in the text. There's one objective pshat in the text. However, if I understand, if the text basically does not contribute far beyond orality, if the actual text is oral, so whenever I interpret the text is also part of an oral tradition. I want to claim that the interpretation of the Poskim, the Rishonim and the Poskim, of the text of the Talmud really continues the oral tradition. It is true that they'll use like the Tzimtzus Chakira in understanding the text of the Gemara, but the whole basis of originality comes from the fact that in essence I'm really continuing an oral tradition. It became more textual. But my ability to interpret text, to be more liberal with text, comes from the very fact that really the text is no more than a levush, a garment for an oral tradition. So many times, Gedalia Paiskim, many times Rabbi Yitzhak Al-Chodah and Rabbi Shafanshin, we see very, very interesting pshatim in the Gemara that I wouldn't necessarily associate, I'm taking this great humility, I wouldn't necessarily associate this with the pshuta of the text of the Gemara, but the fact is, what they're doing, in fact, is extending or continuing this oral tradition. And many times, the shuvas will try to use the different creative understandings of the text and arriving many times at the Das Tera of the Gadol, which I think really is a continuation of the oral tradition. This can only be possible based upon what I'm saying, that the text is merely communicating an oral tradition. Yeah.
We can't look at the Gemara to figure out the intent of Rav and Shmuel or Rav and Abaya, but why can't we look at the text to understand the intent of Ravina and Ravashi or the later...
Because that too, no, because the intent of Ravashi is also an oral tradition. Ravina and Ravashi are trying to arrive at a certain halacha. They're using Rav to arrive at a certain halacha. So if we can't understand how they object, in other words, well, we can't do Ravina, we can't do Ravashi either. It's the same thing too. Ravashi has a certain dasta. He's using Ravina Ravashi.
So, whoever the stump voice of the Gemara is.
Right. So he's using these Amarayim as part of his data, part of his halacha, part of his halacha, coming to Rav at his halacha conclusion. If I can't critically examine his sources, so I cannot textually critically understand his position.
So Rav Trubitz is claiming when I'm learning Gemara, I'm not trying to understand the intent of the stump author of the Gemara.
No, I'm trying to understand his position. But I can't necessarily understand how his position is based in the text and the memories which he's using. In other words, I can understand Ravina Vashi's position 100%. But Ravina Maashi brings the whole Shakmataya to arrive at his nekuda, at his conclusion. I can't critically examine every case of every Rava, Rabba, Rav Yosef, right? Tosefta, Masnisa, right? And critically examine, objectively understand it, and see how that leads continuously to the conclusion of the of the sugya of the sugya Talmud.
So now Rabbi Tribus is coming out like Halivni.
No,
Halivni says that the Stamayim didn't understand the earlier memes. Rabbi Tribus is claiming they understood them, but they changed the meaning or the intent of the original.
They
author.
Could. That's right, because that's part of an oral tradition. An oral tradition. I'm interested that that's exactly what I'm saying. Halivni says like this: look. The Shach of Italia, the Stam of the Gemara, use a statement of Rava, or use the Tosefta. I see that Tosefta means totally different. So it must be he had a different version of Tosefta. He was in the dark. That means like it's like a Toyeb and Vav Mishnah. According to Halivni, the Shach of Italia is a Toyeb and Vav Mishnah. The Sabarayim lived 700 years after the Mohayim. They forgot the Shach of Italia. They forgot, they probably forgot the Bakor. And because of that, it's all one big mistake. The Gemara is one big mistake. I'm saying Chas v'Shalom.
It's all one big bluff now.
No, it's not a bluff. No, it's not a bluff.
It's an intentional
bluff. No. It's not a bluff. No, Chas v'Shalom. It's not a bluff. What happened is that a person will arrive, when a person arrives at a certain conclusion, he has a certain Das Torah. Many times he'll take a source, and it'll be created by that source. We see in the Tshuvas all the time. In other words, because he'll take different sources and he'll show how the different, in other words, he'll interpret different sources in a way in which reflects his own conclusion. Now, this might not be the objective way in which you understand that source, but nonetheless, he feels that if you interpret this source in a certain way, in a certain context, right, then this basically will lend support to the opinion which he, in fact, is trying to prove. So it's not a bluff. No one's right. What?
But Edson, the Gemara has no objective meaning now.
It does objective meaning. No, the Gemara has objective meaning. The Stam of the Gemara has the conclusion of the Gemara have objective meaning. Sure, they do.
But like I said, the poskim are allowed to.
When a Moshe Feinstein writes a tshuva and he brings a Gemara and he makes a whole shtickle tie from the Tal Gemara, which is connected maybe times maybe shaitan and everything. So in other words, the ikur is that you want the Das Torah of Moshe Feinstein. That's the methodology. The methodology is I take a source and I can bring the source with the proper interpretation. As long as I interpret the source right within the bounds of reason, I can take that source and use it as in a methodology to arrive at my psak halacha. This is something which is accepted in all rabbinical Judaism.
So therefore, this, the objective meaning is.
But no. So now when you understand the Gemara. Right. You're trying to understand Ravina Rav Ashi, the Stam, but that's what you're trying to understand.
Right.
You're not trying to understand what Rava said.
But I can do to the Gemara the same thing that Ravina Rav Ashi did to Ravina Abaye. I can take this thing and change the context to get to my Das Torah.
So, in other words, for example, when we have a Gemara, we have many Paiskim, we learn the Gemara Mikatsa La Katsa. So, in other words, there's bounds of this. Of course, you can't take the Gemara entirely and immaculate it from its original meaning. But one can be creative within the text of the Gemara in arriving at a halakha conclusion. We see that done all the time. Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, it's done all the time.
Did they think they were doing that?
What?
Did they think they were doing that?
They think they were what? Who did who think?
They're doing what?
From Moshe, who's he?
Did Rabbi Moshe think that he was being creative and reinterpreting something that's not the opposite of Shana?
Look, I know that, for example, is that changing the Pshat? Now, then, once again, the derech of halacha is not to objectively take a source and look for the pashas of the source. The process of halacha is a resolution of different sources or arriving at a certain conclusion which I feel fits the sources. Those are two different things.
Is there an objective meaning in the Gemara?
No, for sure not. There can't be an objective meaning because you see that every Gemara, there's always three, four derechim in the Rishonim already. There are chorentos at a Gemara.
So when we're learning Gemara, we're not really trying to understand the intention of Rina Rav Ashi. We're trying to understand either the Gemara through the eyes of whichever Rishon we're looking
what
at.
What if you have a machloikis and understanding a sugimi, a katza la katza? So what is objective
meaning? So what I'm doing now is trying to understand the Rishonim.
In my opinion, I'm trying to understand how the Rishonim learn the Gemara. But you're not trying to learn the Gemara. What I'm saying is like this. What I'm saying is, I think.
And the Rishonim themselves have no objective truth either, because there's a machloikis, I don't understand each Rishon.
Right, so therefore, what's the process? So what I want to claim is, if you're speaking about a textual tradition, this is problematic. But really, Halakha Judaism is an oral tradition. An oral tradition, there's a certain amount of textual support that I bring, but a certain amount of Das Torah, which the Gadol will bring to his support too. And there's always a balance between what you call the pshuta, or the pshat of the text, and what I feel, the Das Torah, which I feel the Halakha should be. So many farms, for example, there's a tshuva of Chaim Volozhiner, who tries to anchor Rambam in the Yerushalmi. I think it's a tshuva about Chazakah. And he says that even though the Rambam is not mashma like that, he says that's the pshat, that's the intention of the Rambam. In other words, it says that every pshat I can think about, every halacha I can put in the Rambam. But I'm saying there's even a Kesef Mishnah in the Rambam who says that even though this is not probably the Pshat of the Rambam, it's a Mikvayis. Even though this is not the Pshat of the Rambam, the Iker is to Miyash the Rambam with all the other Poiskim. That's what he says. In other words, I can go on and bring you many, we can list. But what I'm trying to say is the following thing. When I learn the Gemara, Shimish Tamilich Chacham Api the Chazanish, learning through the Poiskim, I learn the Gemara, I'm trying to understand how the Poskim understood the text, but because that's my libud. How do they understand the text? But once again, that everybody understands that every Posek is also in the Kudah, a point in which he has a Das Torah, which is independent of the text. And there is a certain type of a dialectic between the text and the Das Torah. And the Das Torah, I'm identifying with what I want to call the oral tradition. In other words, a written tradition just looks for what he feels is the meaning of the text. An oral tradition is a dialectic between the meaning of the text and a Das Torah, something that comes from my mind view. And this is what I'm calling an oral tradition. The Gemara is communicating an oral tradition, and hence every interpretation of the Gemara, certainly by a giant Pesach who has a Das Torah, is continuing that oral tradition.
So the change now from an oral tradition to a written tradition, which we've located in the 10th century, is in fact not really.
So Baruch Hashem, that's what I want to say. What I want to say is the writing down of the Shas doesn't make it into a textual tradition 100%. What it did was that before the writing down of the Shas, as we locate in the Abba Shvuyim, the psak was only a group of people in two yeshivas, and they had a monopoly over quote unquote the psak and the text, which was an oral text. When the Gemara is written down, the real meaning of it's being written down is it can be used to challenge authority. That's what I'm saying. In other words, the writing down doesn't make it into 100% textual tradition, because the oral tradition continues in a certain sense. But what happens is, that's what the Abba Shvuyim is. It's the downfall of the two yeshivas in Solon Pumbedisa, and the rise of the authority of the Rishonim, or either in Ashkenaz or Sfarad. So in other words, the significance of the writing down of the Gemara, as we saw clearly from the story of the Abba Shvuyim, was not just that it becomes a written culture, therefore the Derech HaPsak and Chase, therefore Abba Seira is cut off. Chas v'shalom. What it means is that now the center of legal authority control is now relocated, right, to other parts of the world. We see this very clearly, for example, the Gemara in Chav Ches, in Bracha, speaks about the Machloikis of Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Gamliel. And Rabbi Gamliel had He had a policy that the only people who can enter the Beis Medrash, he says, are those who are Teichei Kebarei, right? And then when that, when in fact, actually, Rabbi Shua threatens him and there's a revolt, they open up the doors of the Beis Medrash, let everybody in, and then there's a shock of Atalia, and Rabbi Gamliel takes the position, he's schlugged up, and this and that, and he can't invoke his authority anymore. And I claim, what's that Gemara is doing? The same thing too. What happens is, now, before that, the authority is located in the hands of a very small select group of people. Then the walls of the Beit Shemesh are opened up. Everybody comes in. Already, Psak Halacha becomes more textual. Meaning is that you have this change of paradigm. So what I'm saying is that the writing down of the Gemara doesn't mean that now it becomes absolutely a textual tradition and we have to all be scholars, if not we can't learn Gemara. That's obviously false and, you know, contrary to the reality. But rather, it's a different way, a different medium of continuing what is essential in oral tradition. That's what I want to say.
And that's the meaning of Rambam when he says it was accepted by all kinds.
And Achadami. That's the pshat.
What is Rabbi Tribbett's understanding of the ingredients that make up this Das Torah that gives it the orality? What are the things that make that Das Torah happen? Is it a mixture of his Derech HaLimud, his own Sforas?
Same thing to everything. Everything. Whatever comes into the mind of a person. It was a Das Torah.
But it's not a Masorah in the sense that it's a way of understanding the Sugi that was handed to him by his revenge.
No, that's a naive, false understanding of Masorah. But it's a continuum. A continuum means, when I say an oral culture, doesn't mean I handed down the same thing for Egypt. But oral culture means that basically there's a fluidity of the halacha, which is a continuum of gedolim in every generation. That's really what Masorah means. So that's why the oral tradition was never written down, because there's a certain flexibility in oral tradition, which is needed as Klal Yisrael, right, in different parts of the world, faces different halacha questions.
So the state, so the concepts of where there's a rabbinic will as a halakhic way is
I don't like that statement, because that means that the rabbis can always do away with every halakhic problem. No, that's
within certain parameters. Does that have any?
No. I don't like that statement. That statement means it's a gender. I think that rabbis, the gedolim in every generation, have a certain understanding of halacha as the place of generation, and based upon that understanding, what they feel is the Shua said the Torah point of view, right? They will use the text in support of their position. I mean, once again, that there's a circle here, because they might have gotten that, you know, view from the text themselves. I'm not saying Chas V'Shalom, they make up a view and then they paste the text. What I'm saying is there is a dialectic between the Das Torah of the Gadol and the text. And to what extent the Das Torah is supposed to the text is used will depend upon the shayla that they're asking. Yeah, one more question, because
What I'm understanding, sort of on this question, or I think I'm understanding, is that we're saying that basically if you start out learning the text based on, we're working on, let's say, the subjective meaning of the text, that's what you first learn, which gets you to the Das Torah. I mean, after that,
I don't go to what Das Torah is. Das Torah means I've learned through Kolat Torah Kul and I have an understanding of that. Right. I learned the Sugah thoroughly and I have an understanding how the Sugah would apply today. That's what I'm saying.
You start with the text.
I start with the text. It's only some people today have Das Torah without seeing the text. I've become a
Muslim. That's something different.
But I'm saying is, no, for sure, Das Torah can come from a Golobat Torah who's seen Kolat Torah Kul. But I'm saying that if he's seen Kolat Torah Kul, he'll have his slant on things, right? Which is not mefulish in the text. And in his tshuva, he'll have his way of understanding the text. That's not mefulish in the text necessarily either. But that doesn't make it less legitimate. That's what the Tumim says in the Ramah. In other words, the texts are important, but they're not the only ingredient. But in other words, I want to go back to the Gemara. I'm not interested in Das Torah and Rishonim Nachar. I'm interested in the Shas, redaction of the Shas, not redaction of the Rashba and the Ritva and the Ksois. All I'm saying is that very simply is, one cannot look at the text of the Gemara and go back to the sources and decide that the redactor of the Gemara didn't know what was going on. Or he didn't learn the Pshat and Rabba correctly. Or didn't learn the Tosefta properly. That denies the historical reality of the oral nature of the transmission of the halacha throughout the generations. That's my nekuda. Okay? So in other words, my nekuda is that without understanding the Torah Shebi'al Peh as an oral transmission, then one can make terrible mistakes, which, as we see, I think with great respect, Professor Olivnik has made terrible mistakes. And basically, it's a deconstruction, dismantling of the entire Ol Masorah, but it's a mistake. It basically, my opinion is, it shows a a non-comprehension, a vacuous understanding of the nature of the Gemara itself. Now, the final point, we're speaking about different stages here in mind, is when was the Gemara actually written down? That was the next paragraph. Oh, we spoke about the Yerushalmi too. We spoke about the Yerushalmi was actually, doesn't have the supper right. Okay, whatever, there's a lot of things we went into, okay? I can't even remember anymore. It's Tanya Shabbat. But anyway, but I don't have a good memory. But in any case,
it's all on the internet.
It's all on the internet, right?
You can't forget now.
No, I can't forget. Now, the very final point, when was the Gemara written down? And I claim it's at the end of the 10th century. And the remes to that, the side to that, is the Abba Shvulim. And we saw this clearly in the Me'iri, says it explicitly, is that the Goyne tradition, we say Goyne could be a high Goyne, who's in the 11th century. So the Rambam says, I see Perush of the Goyne, it doesn't mean, Chas v'Shalom, that all the Goyne are Perush of the Gemara. It's Goyne in the 11th century, which the change in paradigm takes place at the end of the 10th century. And in the 10th century, as we saw, there's the breakdown, the Rambam himself says, the breakdown of the yeshivas of Surah Pumbedisa. It's a little bit like the Gemara in Chav Chesem, Chav Tesem, Brachos. They broke open the walls of the Beis Medrash, and everybody was able to come in. And in this incredible parallel story, which we're telling in these 20 Shiur by the Chasimus Hashas, we broke down the walls of Surah Pumbedisa that was done by the Abba Shmuel. The Gemara now, Torah now, expands into Europe, into Ashkenaz, into Sfarad. Already it's a text. Already the Rishonim are basing halakhic conclusions on a text and offering textual proofs either for and against. Already it's the beginning of the textual tradition, the textual culture. So in other words, these are the, in my opinion, the ha'olam oimed al shlosha devarim. The fact is that the Shach of Atalia begins at a later point from Rav Ashi onwards. There's no black hole in history that people forgot everything. Chas v'shalom, there's a continual transmission. Secondly, the transmission is oral until the end of the 10th century. And therefore, what we have in the Gemara is a directed Shach v'Atalia, an oral proof, and not a textual proof. That's very, very important to understand the Gemara itself. And very important in the consequence, the fact that what? That the Gemara, that in a sense, the Torah has this element of orality which continues throughout generation. This allows the oral law to continue, albeit in a different form. And then, finally, my historical claim that the writing down of the Shach Tetzer, now, even though this was written, a little bit written down, it was a Tronai Goyen, even has a tshuva, but in any case, the fact is, when the Shas becomes something with which anyone in the world can bring a proof, and Avinu of Ashi and argue with how it's centralized, that, you know, it's not when it was written down so much as when is the change from the oral to the written culture. And that occurs in the 10th century. The fact is that the only manuscripts we have for Shas are from the 11th century, and I want to make a prediction that we're not going to find anything before that, because they didn't exist. So, in other words, and that really concludes the three things that we try to present in the redaction of the show. Now, I just want to go back to, first of all, someone asked me a few months ago, am I yeti with Limud HaTorah with this? So the fact is, we see that the Rishonim speak about it. The Ravid wrote the Sefer Kabbalah, the Meiri wrote Hakdamah to Pirkei Avos, the Rambam and his Hakdamah. In other words, we see that Rishonim, Yerushalayim Goyin, right? Well, I second these things, which means that certainly they didn't consider to be Bittul Torah. So Bittul Torah certainly it isn't. What I'm saying is, the fact is that this Limud is important because so as much as we understand the nature of the Shas, it enhances our ability to learn the Shas. So even if you want to know what you would call, first of all, when you learn these things, you learn sugyas that, you know, you don't come across, or maybe you came across it, but you didn't understand their significance. That's also part of Limud HaTorah. But in addition to that too, the fact is that this is a part of Emunas HaTorah, which which we know for the Ramban in the second Mitzvah Leisa says Shachach HaRambam, right? Haydat l'hel v'nechem yemei Shabbat b'chayrev. The Ram says the Limud HaTorah, Limud Amudas HaTorah, Limud HaTorah, that Amudas HaTorah is also part of Limud HaTorah. When we understand the Torah, we understand how the Torah works, and we understand it the proper way from Rabbi Seder Rishayinim, and not from scholarly, you know, excursus into the text itself. We understand it through the proper Hashkafa, for the proper, those people who have transmitted us the Besorah, the Rabbi Seder Rishayinim, the Achrayinim, that we could properly really understand, you know, the Torah in of itself, and the Sodom will become the I hold Makayim Livra Teira, but if you're not satisfied with that, we'll Makayim at least what's called the, you know, not forgetting Har Sinai, which is also a Leis HaSeinah, the Ramban list. But the fact is that we see that Rishayim were Isaac in this. But mention that too, I think it's a very important thing, that Damal Hashim La Pikainis. Without a proper understanding of the Shas, then we don't know what the answer to the Apikainis. And that could be a very, very dangerous thing. I think I saw a Sefer written by some Nassim David Rabinowitz, who wrote a Sefer Dor Vashar Dor Shav about he pursues in history. There's a Talmud from Moran Balapachad Yitzchak Rabbi Yitzchak Kotner, and it says that there is an inya mitzvah to learn even things in history. If it's coming lafuke the shita of people who are kaifim would like to try to deny the validity of the Torah. So I think that part of, you know, the lashon of Chazal is, you know, she should be mamik b'teira v'damah shevel apikaitis. You know, before you know how to make apikaitis, you have to know what you're talking about. I mean, some people still have that cheetah. So, because of that, it's very important. Without thoroughly understanding our Messiah properly, then we have nothing to answer to the apikaitis. So this is a very, very important thing. So that's number one. Now, number two, really, all of these shulam are really a hagdama. Because really, to prove my point, I have to go through every sugya in Shas and show you how it's done. Of course, I'm lazy. I didn't have enough time. I haven't done that yet. But really, these shulam really are just a hagdama. They're just introductions. They're shavashim, right? A person really, to be convinced of my point, to be able to refute my point, really, I mean, what I have to really do is really have to show you how every sugya in Shas really works like this. Now, you can't do that only in 20 shulam. And I don't know if there's enough, whatever it is, we have enough, you know, internet. But whatever it is, in any case, I don't know if there's enough fiber space to do that. But in any case, the fact is that really what you should really be debating from me is you know, Mayor Treibitz is very, very nice. I want you to go through the Sugas and Shas and show us really how it works out. Of course, I have the ability to either receive or not to receive to your demands, but the question, but in any case, the proof of the pudding, like in anything, is really going through the sugyas and shas and seeing exactly, you know, how we can use this to facilitate our understanding of the, you know, of Dvar Hashem Zu Halacha. That's my opinion is. But that's Chazon Lamayit. Okay. In any case, that's just about it. That wraps things up. I want to thank Rabbi Sedley for his, first of all, his important ha'oris and questions and kashas. And I hope I gave to you. So if I didn't, then I hope that, the mokem nichol chamed hashamayim. But for doing the camera. That's the least of the thing. That's important. I want to thank the members of the Hashkafa Circle who also for lightning comments and bearing through with my yeshiurim. I want to thank the other people who are here who also have contributed very, very much in different tikkufas. And most of all, I really want to thank, even though I'm not even looking at you, I want to thank those people who are listening to the shiurim. Some people have said in the comments, I'd like to, you know, hear really, do you have really, and don't blog it. You can just, you know, you get to write to me and tell me your name or whatever it is, you know. And I'd be interested in hearing some of your feedback. And the Gemara says that Rebbe was big because Shechichat Talmidim Gabei, the Gemara says, and needed Daf Yudala. In other words, without Talmidim, without Shekel V'Talya, then even the person who, the imposter who purports to be a Chacham, can't even believe that he's a Chacham. So in other words, if the true litmus test that the people have really God's only to show him, if you send in your critiques and this and that, if you just, you know, either you're a critic on the entire thing, tell me. If you're sitting down there and you're masking with everything, that's also not good. There's not Pavlovian Judaism. We want to really You know, so in other words, your comments are very, very much, you know, appreciated. I don't get to answer most of them, but in other words, but in any case, it's very important that people have important ha'oras that they, you know, they send it in. That rabbisedley@gmail.com, that's the best place to send it in, and we appreciate it. In any case, this year, I should have said this at the very beginning, is Eloi Nishmas, my mother, Yafa Bas Rav Shaul, whose yahrzeit is today, and in any case, in the final shiur, I want to wish everybody kol tov from an undisclosed place, and still undisclosed in Yerushalayim Yirah Kodesh, Hatzlacha Rabba, and I hope that Amir Tashem, we get the chance to speak out these issues further. Be well.